Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the August 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Our panelists today include Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And Kevin Van Trump is here as well from Kansas City and the Van Trump Report. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLHE.org. And there you can pick your tickets up for the Farm Assets Conference. Both of these guys will be there on the 22nd day of November. The cost is just $30. Register today at farmassetsconference.com. But don't wait. We only have maybe, 7 to 10 days to get everything squared away before we get to that date. One other note, if you come to the event and you're a farmer, all of your registration fee will be reimbursed.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's start with this simple question. USDA's report released on Wednesday of this week. We talked with USDA NAS about some of the numbers. The 17-bushel increase for corn in North Dakota was an anomaly. USDA tells us that they do not have objective yield plots in that state because they don't raise enough corn, and that the difference is simply what the observations from farmers from 1 month to the next looked like and how they changed after they went through the harvest season. However, in the Western Corn Belt, each and every state had an increase in yield. Can you believe this? And what does it tell you about the marketplace? Mike Zuzulo.
I have a hard time with that, Todd. I really do, based upon the farmers coming back out of the fields, closing up the bins at this point. Ohio, I do not think that the yield should have been increased there. I have a real problem with Kansas not being lowered, at least for the eastern part of Kansas where I'm at. Missouri also. I think the whole heart and soul of this market report for the November USDA is this is, if you take out 2012, this is the fourth time in 42 years that USDA took the yield down in September or October and then brought it back up in November. And I think with higher harvested acres and only five states reporting a record yield, whereas in 2014 we had 12 states reporting a record yield, I just think statistically and anecdotally by the producers it's not that high.
This was an increase of 1.9 bushels to the acre, now at 175.3 bushels nationwide as an average. It's a very big corn crop. Your assessment of the numbers as they were released by USDA, Kevin Van Trump.
Yeah, I think if you're basing your marketing decisions off 1 to 2 bushel per acre adjustment by the USDA in either direction, I would have to say you're watching the wrong thing. I just think here up here at 175, I don't care if it's 173 or 176. I mean, it's still a huge crop. And prices right now, especially in the world that I live in, are I think the markets are being based on the alternatives and the macro side of this thing. And it's the fundamentals are the fundamentals. So I think you have to be careful right here and not get too caught up in, you know, the adjustments that are being made by the USDA. I think they are what they are. And we have to take a little longer term vision of things and see how we can get out of these low prices.
So what are the alternatives, the macros that you've been watching that corn you believe is being adjusted upon?
Well, I think you're sitting here with most guys on the bearish side of the front looking at 2.5, 2.7 billion bushel carry as we push forward. And the question is, are we going to plant more corn acres? I go out and talk to the Bankers Association in every state, and each time the hand goes up, first hand, hey, when are these guys going to quit planting more acres? Or when are they going to switch the acres back? Well, you tell me when the banker's going to quit loaning money. I mean, I ask them back. I don't know that question. We're seeing a lot of those issues right now. I think you're starting to see with this Trump administration, you're starting to see copper tick higher. You're seeing some other things point to signs of inflation. We're seeing rates jump a little bit. If the rates start to move up on us, that's going to be a more macro headwind type shift, and maybe we possibly get a tailwind or a commodity bull back woke back up and maybe prices bounce with that tailwind. So I think there's a chance that you could see some more money come off the sideline or a rotation of assets back into commodities, and maybe we get a tailwind behind beans and corn.
So looking forward to potentially some inflation to salvage a big crop for this year and next. You did mention acreage and what the possibilities were there. Darrell Good earlier in the week when we talked with him just after the USDA report mentioned that as we look into 2017, unlikely that South America would absorb any of this big crop, meaning they're likely to have a big crop and not really solve or provide a solution for what's available on the world marketplace, and that an adjustment in acreage would have to be made at some point in USDA. And if I recall this correctly, and it's unusual for Darrell to take this much of a step, thinking not only do acres have to change, but not to just a different rotated crop. Acreage in the United States has to potentially shrink.
Yeah, without a question, that's what everyone's having a tough time swallowing. We've got farm operations in Brazil, and I don't see – bottom line is this. Right now, the low-cost provider is going to win this game. We're in some type of ag technological revolution to speak, and that's a deflationary-type environment for ag, because you're going to increase technology, and with that's going to come to increase bushels. What we're seeing, 3 and 4 years in a row of record yields in beans, got record years here in corn. It's going to be a low-cost provider's game. Unfortunately, what everyone's having a hard time swallowing, we're not the low-cost provider. With the strength in the U.S. dollar and the way that you're spending some of this out, your low-cost providers are in South America and in parts of Ukraine and in the Black Sea region, and that's become a little bit of a headwind for us. So I'm with you. I'm on board. You got to take acres out of the equation. So who's going to be that guy? You got to look around the room when you go to a convention and say, who's going to be out of the game?
Big picture, broad perspective, macroeconomics.
Well, Financial Times is calling it Trumpflation. I don't like what I see so far. I like the fact that a tax cut plus lower health care costs equals more consumption, which would mean more inflationary bias, but I do not like the fact that the dollar and the crude oil and some of these other key commodities are not taking the route of inflation in this post-election market move. I'm wondering if a lot of it isn't computer-based, Todd, and that we will have to wait probably as much as a week before we get really a new trend established because of the shock that the market saw politically. And, you know, this is Brexit on steroids. It's, a lot of people have talked about that. I agree with that, that the world was not prepared for this. The computers were not prepared for it. And you could see that on election night. One night we were making massive new lows. The next day, 24 hours later, we were making new fresh highs in the Dow Jones. I don't think that would have happened 10, 15 years ago without the computer's help and the algo trade's help. So macro fundamentals right now are mixed in the ag sector, in my opinion. I like what gold did. I like the bond yields going higher, but not sharply higher. That squeezes consumption.
Kevin, have you talked to the black box traders about what the algorithms see when there's that large a swing in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and what it might mean going forward just on the technical side? Because that will stick in the charts for, well, should stick for a very long time. But I'm wondering whether the algorithms see that differently than chartists might see, and whether you've had time to think about that, maybe discuss that with others, or maybe it's just not an issue at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot depends on how your programming is and who's running it. And there's a lot of different algos right now and artificial intelligent guys in the game that, you know, the question was on the election night was just simply there was a lot of uncertainty. There was a talk that there was going to be a tie. The algos triggered in a tie. They had the worst case scenario thrown in that this is going to drag out for another several weeks. We go limit down, hit the breakers. A lot of guys I knew were buying off that as it became apparent that Trump was going to take the victory because the uncertainty was out of the air at that point. And now you have this uncertainty where the talk becomes the walk, I guess, so to speak. And we're going to see how all of this plays itself out. But, you know, I think we got to be careful in this environment. I'm sitting I'm on the long side of wheat. I think, you're record short. And just to play into what you're saying with the algos, you see any type of movement by Putin, you see any type of backlash from Trump towards NATO, the algos are going to be programmed to buy into that wheat type of play. You're gonna see a short exodus, and you're gonna play over into that area. It's no different than when the equity guys and the funds were sitting on 30% gains in the stocks 3 years ago when we started hearing headlines of the polar vortex. They were calling, wanting to know how to hedge their equity gains, and they were talking about getting long the wheat market because that would provide them some cross-hedging exposure with their equity portfolio. They figured if we had a really bad winter, you'd have first quarter earnings come in poorly, and they would cross-hedge into the wheat side of things. So I think you have all these new dynamics in play, and as Mike said, no one really knows at all how this is going to play out right now. It's kind of just the cards have been thrown in the air, and I guess we're going to have to see how the algos are exactly programmed and digest some of this data. Like Mike said, I'm not seeing it with the crude right now and the dollar, and I think everyone's wanting to figure out what direction they're going to take. And I said the other day, I'm counting to three Mississippi before I make any big swings or shifts in my portfolio. So I was looking at some numbers, Dan. I'm like, a little scary. I'm pretty heavily weighted with Facebook, Amazon, and Starbucks, and I think all of them made big outlashes at Trump, and I'm sitting here now saying, wow, I don't know if I want to be owning those right at this moment with some of the war they waged against him at the time. So I think a lot of that plays out, and you got this rotation of money. So just what Mike said.
So one follow-up on the low-cost side and the acreage, what Kevin talked about just now really resonated with the, kind of trying to combine what the aftermath of the election is, what the supply-demand fundamentals are. I'm trying to push really hard to clients right now to consider, as we see November 17 being, still hang around $10, still try and go up towards their 10.09 and a quarter high as of Thursday or Wednesday night's trade. You had a perfect storm of sorts in beans last year, Todd, where you had China's hog herd rebuilding, and you also had South American weather problems. Now you have a 480 U.S. carryover. You have China on the long end of the curve getting their hog herd rebuilt, and you have a South American production potential that is over 100 million metric tons in Brazil. Unless something, i.e. the dollar and what Kevin's talking about, shifts the investor asset allocation, I think producers really need to think about the simple take the profit, sell and defend when it comes to the soybeans. Lock the $10 in. Once you get the $10 locked in, you can always defend that. You can defend it a couple, three times and be able to kind of take control of the marketing plan instead of it always taking control of you in this kind of environment we're living in.
Just a quick reminder that you're listening to Commodity Week, and that the two guys that are here, Kevin Van Trump and Mike Zuzulo, who you just heard, will be with us on the 22nd day of November at the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. You can come see them in person. The cost is just $30. You'll see details of a whole day-long event. Starts at 8 a.m. in the morning with an Illinois Corn Growers Association's annual meeting. We'll pick up and open our doors at 9:30 and run through about 5 o'clock. Get the tickets today at FarmAssetsConference.com. Okay, Mike Zuzulo, I'm thinking about this still kind of on the black box side and what the algorithms may or may not do. Put it in historical perspective. I'm wondering when and if there are scares in the marketplace, what the safe haven is, and if that's commodities and money comes as an influx, whether that's true or not true, and how much?
I would not say the commodities are yet built for the safe haven status. There's still too much crude in the physical market, and even more importantly than that, Todd, is if you see the dollar continue higher and crude oil not go higher to offset it, I think the trade will jump back in the algo side and get negative the emerging markets again, and that will trip the wire, so to speak, algorithmically, to go back into the long dollar, long U.S. assets. What we saw essentially after 2014 and as we got out of 2014 and into 2015, that seemed to be the biggest thing when I go back and prepare for the winter seminars right now. That seemed to be one of the biggest features of this fundamental market that we're seeing right now that could redevelop as a result of all of these massive changes. And that's where it goes back to the dollar index, and the DEIS contract is back towards its February highs. Doesn't take much for it to make a new 2016 high once it goes above that level. And I follow an ETF, the EEM ETF, extremely important for me right now. It is on a major monthly support line right now. If we violate that on a monthly close, that's tough in the commodity sector as a safe haven investment.
All right. So I think maybe I've got the summary right on this, but there's a lot happening here, and I need both of your help. And then we'll come back to inflation, because that seems that it may be the only potential bright spot, but I'm not certain that's the case. I was wondering really whether there would be an influx of money into the commodities as a safe haven if there are problems or stumbling blocks going forward. That doesn't sound like it's the case. So that inflation would be one of the potentials to move a marketplace higher. Weather, we haven't talked about a lot yet, but that one as a weather market seems far more probable given what happened last year in South America and the fact they think that both traders and farmers have short memories and last year's not very far away. And then we have inflation. Have I got this correct in my mind?
Yeah, I think the overall is just I'm a visual guy too, and I got to keep it fairly simple, but I think that we've had a macro space environment where you've had to have a two-strike approach as a marketer, and I do on my farms. I mean, you're going to the plate, choking up on a bat and scooting up in a box and doing anything you can to get on first base. And like Mike said, I don't think it's not an environment to be swinging for the fences. That's why I like the fact I'm trying to sell out into deferreds, into beans. I think, yeah, beans have a potential to make a little move if you see money rotate. And none of us know where the money's going to land, though. I mean, we know money is in rotation right now, but we're not sure where it's going to land. And until we know that, that's why I said there's a potential that you could get a tailwind here. But I'm telling you right now, I'm selling into it. And if I get a weather rally or a weather headline, I'm probably selling into it because I'm still going to the plate with a two-strike approach, saying that the overall landscape and environment is not super conducive for $6 corn or a run to $13 or $14 beans. Not at this moment. That's what I'm saying. I think you have to know where you're at in this game at this juncture, and I think that's where we stand until we're able to see a little bit more. Guys have to play it fairly conservative and try and stay in the game. I mean, that's what I'm trying to tell you. The world is looking to see who's going to cut acres, and they're looking here. They're not looking over there. This is a different deal. So they're looking here, and like you guys said, who's going to cut? And that's the question. And if you're the high-cost provider, I think you're the guy out. When the music stops, you're the guy without the chair.
Where do you lose acres in the United States?
I wish I knew that. Everyone wants to say in your outlying areas that where guys used to not be corn farmers, into your Dakotas and up into those areas out to the west and things where they became corn farmers. But I don't see it happening. I'm not sure. I mean, the basis is going to dictate if they're going to crush them on the basis like they have with logistical complications in the rail. And you're going to tell me they're going to hit them at $1.20, $1.30 under on corn. They're going to have a tough go of it. So everyone's area is going to become mission critical, and you are going to have to stay on top of it like no other. And when those opportunities arise, you're going to have to take it, and you're going to have to fire. So my theory, and I just keep it simple, is shoot when the ducks are in the air. I don't ask questions. You start asking questions, and by the time you try and figure it out, it could be gone. So when you've got the opportunity and you've penciled it out and you feel you can make a good gross, I suspect you have to do that.
Pre-1996 freedom to farm total acres could be in the works over the long term, Todd, if we stay in low price environment. I think in the shorter term and kind of coordinating with the bean mindset and the philosophy of selling in the deferreds like Kevin was talking about, is your current bean corn ratio, NOVDs, with NOV just about ready to go off the board, is around 2.9. The 17 NOVDs bean corn ratio is down around 2.6. You're already telling the corn market we don't want your acres, and I think with beans getting up around $10, and if they would especially get into the 10.25, 10.40 level in new crop beans, I have a lot of producer clients and subscribers right now saying, call me when that happens, I'm going to plant more beans and hedge it. And I think that's the simplest answer in the short term, is use that as your baseline for your marketing plan and at least protect that, protect your hind end on that side, because that's a knowable fact at this point in my view.
Okay, I'm going to throw a comment in here just because I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I don't really expect either of you to remark to it other than I was wondering as we move forward and it could have been either on the Clinton or a Trump side given their view on trade or proposed views on trade, what that might mean, and how that might change acreage in the U.S. potentially, and where it would change, and whether the farmers in Iowa and the Dakotas and Nebraska who built ethanol plants might be in a better position at some point than physically, and this seems a little odd, a farmer in Illinois where 40% of their corn goes to the export market. So something to consider, not something I suppose really to worry about at this point, but just something that had crossed my mind. We have talked about corn, but we've not talked a lot about pricing corn at this point. A little bit about soybeans. There's an awful lot of corn out there, Kevin, and an awful lot of unpriced corn in both commercial and on-farm storage.
Yeah, I would agree, and it seems like that's going to continue. We've seen huge ground piles out in some areas where we've got some ethanol plants, and it's, you know, it looks to be the same story. There has been some pockets, like I said, where the basis surprisingly has improved for some guys and made some pretty dramatic improvements as of late and in a few select areas. And other guys, like I said, that may have not been the case. You know, how that plays out politically with the Trump versus Clinton is still has me a little bit baffled. I suspect maybe Trump will start to do more, and I've heard rumors that there would be more infrastructure-type improvements into the river systems. The river systems may go ahead, and I've heard of some interest from some of the bigger money players trying to buy some things along the river, some floodplain grounds along the rivers, and some things in those areas because they may come into play as you see this infrastructure start to go up. And I think that could be a windfall for some guys in those areas. And we may actually see some, it's hard to imagine, but we may actually see some corn move from west to east against the grain, so to speak. And, you know, I think that's going to play into it as well, especially with the rail. And the rail's an interesting, and the transportation's interesting, and how Trump's going to put those pieces together. And a lot of those moving parts are going to be really instrumental in where these corn acres are going to come from or go away from. So.
Yeah, so infrastructure could play. Infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure. There is money already, of course, ready and available if they pull the triggers in Washington, D.C. to update the locks and dams along the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. That could help out trade immensely, or at least open up the infrastructure to move trade along. There are so many things on both sides of the fence here.
You know, one thing, though, I've never been nervous about Trump and the trade, and that's because China and Russia and other countries have already been outmaneuvering us. We've got the China New Silk Road policy. That's how long? 2 years old now. China and Russia just signed a bilateral trade agreement this week. Essentially, China bought 20% of the former Ministry of Energy in the Soviet Union. When this is Rosneft, pre-Soviet, pre-Russia and democratization in the Soviet Union, China's in big with the Russians at this point. And you can see strategically, politically, economically, they're in the Middle East, they're in the European Union, they're working away from the United States and the European Union as far as reliance economically. So I'm not as nervous. I'd be more nervous about Mexico and our corn business with them. A very good feeder cattle client I have here in St. Joe, Missouri, talked to me today and said Mexican cattle have just stopped at the border because of the peso and the Mexicans won't sell. And so that right there tells me you probably got the mercantile exchange low coming very, very soon if you're slowing the main artery of feeders from the south coming in at this point. Back to what Kevin was talking about in the basis and the transportation, I don't know if I've ever seen this stark of a difference in corn yield. Like I said before, you've got five states, record yields. You've got states, though, in Ohio, they came in at 164 on yield. This year, they were at 176 in 14. Indiana was 177. They were at 188 in 2014. And you've got Texas, 124 this year versus 148 state yield, Todd. So I'm not as nervous about the export market minus Mexico and what may happen with the Trump administration, because I think you've got logistically, as Kevin's pointing out, some real holes to fill with lighter corn yields. You've got Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, all with record yields. They're all north. They're all north. So corn will have to work itself north to south. So I'm not as nervous about the export market.
Yeah, so let me go back through that. So essentially what you're saying is the peso against the U.S. dollar has stopped. Mexican beef coming north across the border, that should put a low into the cattle market. Doesn't in the feeder cattle market. We won't export as much corn potentially because of that to south to Mexico, which is the number two importer of U.S. corn at this point. However, you're not worried about that simply because we may be able to pick some of that back up in the United States in our own beef production.
It really goes back to the dollar. I think we can offset a lot of the lost business out of Mexico and other key countries that maybe would be negatively influenced by the Trump victory if we could get that corn moved into farther south in Latin America. Countries we haven't seen for several years buying corn from us right now in Latin America and South America, and especially in Asia. We've got to keep our Japanese, South Korean markets, and that's where it goes back to the dollar. We just don't want new 2016 highs right now.
Big pictures, including the livestock and what you've heard so far?
You know, I just think it seems as if the world has a glut of protein on its hands, and I think we go lower. I've had a lot of guys call me wanting to know if we're going to step in here, if I'm going to step in and get into the cattle business. And hell, I remember trading back at, I don't know, we were 92, 93 or something. And I'm telling you now, guys were calling in wanting to give cattle away, it seemed like, as we cycled lower on the big downstroke. And I think, you know, I don't see any stop if this dollar continues to move higher and everyone's expanding herds. And I know a lot of the cow-calf guys just keep going out to the sales and buying. I'm just not buying any right here. I'm going to take a little break. And I know the guys that some of the guys at Cattle Facts, some of the other guys that we talk to regularly about the cattle market. And I think there's just a glut of protein in the global marketplace. And it's going to be a tough road to hoe here. And, you know, I think a lot of guys called that a year or two back. It seemed like, you know, the row croppers had their heyday with the $7 and $8. And I was at a Fed meeting, and I remember them saying, you know, we'll see what the cattle ranchers do here now if they can hang on and ride this bull. And we had the big bull market, and it's been tough to ride on the way down. So I think that trend continues. I don't think there's anything that's going to just really reverse it on a dime.
You said twice in that commentary, red meat proteins. I am going to make a leap of faith here that you met across the board cattle, pork, and poultry.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. That's what I'm talking about. And even into the soy side of things. So I think you just got to go ahead up there.
Thanks so much. Of course, Mike Zuzulo, Kevin Van Trump will both be at the Farm Assets Conference again the 22nd day of November. WillAg.org, and there's a link to FarmAssetsConference.com. Buy your tickets right now. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.